Welcome to the Domestic Abuse Breakthrough Show, where we tackle violence against women and girls through education, empowerment, and hope. Join Kate, a survivor and advocate, as she shares insights, strategies, and stories that inspire healing and action. Together, we'll break the cycle and pave the way for a future of safety and strength. This show contains a trigger warning. And now, here's your host, Kate Beasley.
So welcome back to another episode of the Domestic Abuse Breakthrough Show. And as I said last week, we are following on the conversation with Yasmin, who is Fozia Javid's mum. We finished off the conversation last week with talking about the police failings and how Fozia was failed. So do you want to tell us a little bit more about your experience with the police, Yasmin?
Yeah, that's right. Well, just to recap, the first visit was 4 months before the murder, where the police officers had actually said to Fozia, "You're medium risk," after gathering all the information from her and the proof. But unknown to us, after the murder, it was communicated to us that Fozia had been reassessed, I think a few days later, and regraded at high risk. And that was never communicated, that information, to Fozia or myself. So that was the first police visit. And then I contacted the police again, second time, with Fozia's permission, 6 days before the murder. And again, this police officer, she came. I think she spent approximately 3.5 hours. And Fozia communicated further abuse to this police officer. The police officer was also told that Fozia was pregnant. She was going to leave him. She was told about the trip to Edinburgh. And at no point did that police officer turn around to Fozia and say, "Fozia, now that you are pregnant, you are at very high risk, and the fact that you're going to leave him is another high risk factor." And when I asked the question, "Should Fozia be going to Edinburgh?" the police officer said, "I'm going to ask my sergeant, and if the sergeant says it's okay to go, you won't hear from me. But if the sergeant says Fozia shouldn't be going, then I'll contact you." And the reason why I asked her about Edinburgh, it wasn't because I thought the most horrific thing was going to happen. I just thought it's not going to be a pleasant trip for Fozia. No. So she shouldn't go. And look at the failings there. It's like unbelievable. And I didn't even know, and obviously Fozia didn't know, that when a woman is pregnant, she's at even higher risk. I found all this out after the murder.
Yeah, there's typical escalation points we look for when we're risk assessing. You know, it is moving in together, it is engagement, it is marriage, it is pregnancy, birth of the first child, but generally being having a child with a perpetrator is a risk factor. Because the children are become a tool, a weapon to facilitate the control. We do look for those escalation points, and each milestone, it will generally ramp up a notch. That's the importance of timelines. This is why I stress strongly, you know, when risk assessing it, doing a timeline is absolutely vital, because without that timeline, it's very difficult to prove. And fortunately, you know, obviously Fozia being a lawyer, she was already gathering this evidence, which obviously, like you said, without that evidence, you would never have got a conviction.
No, absolutely not, because just to make it absolutely clear, the perpetrator did not know about the two police visits. He didn't know about the recordings. He didn't know about the fact that Fawzia had contacted divorce lawyers. This information was communicated to him after the murder, in the disclosures. I mean, time and time again, you're told, contact the police if you are in these abusive situations for help. And the police were contacted on two occasions.
And as we've had this conversation, you know, she was, you know, when you report to the police, the risk increases tenfold. It does. And this is why we have the safety exit processes that a victim should really go through and follow before exiting and leaving an abusive partner, an abusive relationship. But with Fawzia, when you called the police, she was already, it wasn't like we needed to, she needed to be navigated out of.
No, of course not.
I hope she didn't. She was already out. So that was the perfect time for them to go and arrest him and say, right, Fawzia, don't go back. You stay here. We're dealing with it.
That's it, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, they're the experts, or so they say.
Yeah.
Fawzia wasn't. I wasn't.
Because, you know, honestly, you know, when I've obviously already mentioned in other episodes, and obviously we've spoken about this, I was failed massively by the police. Did they secure my safety? No, they didn't. Did they increase my risk? Yes, they did. But because we live so very similar, so if Fawzia had, because Fawzia had was at your house at the time.
That's right, visiting on both occasions.
Yeah, it's a very, very similar scenario to mine, where because he had locked us out and he had navigated things where it meant that, and I was told that I had to, I couldn't live under the same roof as him, and if I did, then social services were going to be informed. So he'd move things in a direction that we couldn't come back from. And I said to him, I said, look, fine, I won't divorce you, but we have to live separately because you've created this situation. But yeah, okay, you're making it clear you'll leave me destitute. Well, I'll stay married to you. And, you know, and obviously his idea was that we would come back together. But I'd obviously put firm rules in place around that.
Yeah.
Because we did live separately, my situation was very similar to what Fosius would have been while she was with you. Is there was I didn't have to navigate safely out of the marital family home.
Yeah.
So it was when I called the police, it was an easier decision for me because, and I even then I said I didn't want to press charges because I was still fearful of the consequences.
Yeah.
But what it did was it moved me in a direction that I knew there was no coming back from. So the minute they said, and actually that's one thing I will say that the police did for me, that's the one big favor that they did for me, was by taking that decision out of my hands and saying, right, that's it. We are, it's too serious to ignore. And that was the sergeant's exact.
And absolutely. And they should have said to us,
that's exactly it. Yeah.
We've listened to the recordings.
Yeah.
The information that you've given us, we are experienced police officers. And let us tell you, we see this day in, day out, and 100%. You are at very high risk, and we are now taking this out of your hand.
Yeah.
And so they should have gone and arrested him.
The minute that they said that to me was, I knew that, oh, right, okay, you're proceeding, you're going to arrest him. Right, okay, there's no backtracking now.
Absolutely.
We're on this treadmill, and if we backtrack, we know the risks are severe.
Exactly.
I have to move forward with that divorce. That's the one thing that I will say with to the police, and you know, I thank from that. That's one thing I do thank them for. It's because do I mean I don't know if they'd taken the decision like they did with Fosia, would I have filed for divorce? I don't know. I don't. There's a strong possibility I wouldn't have, Yasmin. Genuinely, strong possibility I wouldn't.
But don't forget, it's on the documentary. Fosie had contacted divorce lawyers,
Yeah,
and
and so
that
yeah, again.
law firm records all phone calls, so there's proof there. So Fosia, she had done everything.
And again, that's very common for a victim to do. I did that as well. So I'd spoken several times to a divorce lawyer, and because what you're doing is you're data gathering, you're forward
You're forward planning, and
planning, or when
she'd
you are ready to leave.
yeah
That's
and
what you're doing.
she'd already said to me, look, I'm going to come and stay with you, then I'm going to get my own place. So
Yeah.
you know, she'd put everything in place
I know.
to leave him.
Oh, honey. It's just, I mean, you know, and this is, you know, and if any professionals are listening, I want you to really listen to the heartbreak of a mum who has lost her daughter
And grandchild.
and unborn grandchild.
Yeah.
This doesn't just affect one life,
No, it doesn't.
affects a whole family.
It's a massive ripple effect for many, many generations to come. You take the life of one woman, and it destroys her family, her friends, and you know, society is now missing out on a wonderful, amazing young woman that gave so much and would have continued to do so had her life not been cruelly snatched away from her.
You know, and when, you know, when professionals are dealing with cases and looking at cases, you really need to think about, you know, my mentor, Laura Richards, refers to this as murder in slow motion. And it is so true. It is something that happens over, it's like a drip, 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 drip. It doesn't just happen overnight. They leave clues.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the thing is, when you think about it, it's like obviously now I'm looking at it in a different way as to I was back then. And you know, Fosia handed it to the police on a plate. There were the voice recordings, the information that she had told them. There was obviously divorce lawyers. There were
Oh, there was, well,
ample
Yasmin, there was that.
evidence.
There was that camp video, that CCTV footage of where he pinned her against
Absolutely,
the car.
which I saw for the first time, where it looks like he's trying to strangle her. You know, so you know the had it. Then even in the hospital, the NHS failed Fosia. Because when that witness went to tell the midwife what the murderer had been saying, why didn't that midwife call in security and police like they're told to do so? She didn't.
So where, so when, what, where, so what, it, going back to the timeline of events, when was that incident on the street?
A week before the murder.
That was a week before. And did the police have access to that footage before she went to Scotland?
Well, they will have done, because when the police officer who was called 6 days before the murder was called in, she was told that she was told about the incident on the high street. Fosie didn't go into it because I was sat there, which is another failing on their part, because they should have said, look, we want to speak to your mother. sorry, want to speak to you
Yeah.
without your mother being there, because it was very clear that although they had enough information to know that Fosie was at high risk, Fosie was ho still holding stuff back. So the
And it's also very, very common for victims, even when they do, when they're talking with an authority figure, to minimize their experience anyway. It's a difficult setting. They've been conditioned to minimize the perpetrator's behavior.
Yeah,
It's not
absolutely.
uncommon when faced with the
But she had that information. She
authority.
had the information about the high street. She
Yeah.
had the information about the witness reporting his behavior in the hospital. So she knew all that, the
Yeah.
police officer. She knew that Fosie was pregnant. She knew Fosie was going to leave him. She knew Fosie was going to Edinburgh. Look at all that information.
Yeah. 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 There's just so many failings.
Yeah, absolutely. But like I said, the NHS, they let Fosie down as well.
Well, let's talk about the NHS after this short interval. We'll be back in a minute.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, ant and deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
Strawberries and cream.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So welcome back to the second section of this show. So we started to talk about the NHS, which is another topic in itself. You know, there obviously there are many, many failings, as we've already covered, with the police, and we could talk about this all day, Yasmin.
Yeah.
All.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it isn't just the police that have failed the failed Fosia, is it?
No.
The medical professionals, and again, you know, unfortunately, these are failings we see repeatedly with many, many victims. When you look at lots of cases, you will be able to pick out. And I know you've spoken to lots of mums, haven't you, Yasmin?
Yeah.
Lost daughters as a result of domestic abuse. And you'll probably notice yourself there will be common denominators in all those cases where you can cherry pick out of every single one of them something that was exactly the same as what Fosia went through. And this is why these professionals need to learn this.
Yeah.
Isn't just the police. Yes, the biggest area that needs educating is the police, CPS, courts, court professionals. But we also need to look at early intervention and the people that are equipped and in a position to early intervene are medical professionals, schools. All those professionals are equipped, are in positions where they are responsible for safeguarding.
Yeah.
It's vital that they have these skills. Okay, so like, I mean, it's like the hospital, they recognised that the nurse, the midwives that were present, they recognised something was going on and something wasn't quite right. Well, why didn't they do something? That is the big question. Why didn't they?
I mean, as you saw in the documentary, the witness who's in the bed next to Fosia, she had heard all the abuse. That the murderer was subjecting Fosia to, and she reported it, and rightly so, to the midwife. And again, why wasn't the police called in then?
No, it's they need to have these skills of being able to risk assess. You know, if they thought something is happening, they should be sitting, because they are in a position or because quite often, as we've already mentioned that a victim can minimize with,
of course, absolutely,
somebody who's in a position of authority. So the police are a prime example of where a victim will feel intimidated and naturally go to minimize their experience.
Absolutely.
Whereas somebody like a nurse, doctor, GP, therapists, counsellors, those are people that with or without domestic abuse, we naturally feel safe with them.
Absolutely. I mean, the lady was an independent witness who was in the hospital bed next to Fosia. She had never met the murderer or Fosia in her life.
Yeah.
So she felt scared for Fosia and went and reported the abuse to the midwife.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, they are in a perfect position where
absolutely
the patient, as patients, we naturally, certainly nurses, more so with nurses than doctors, than male doctors, but, you know, female nurses, women naturally feel safer with them. They feel safe. They feel they can confide in them. I mean, I remember when, you know, when I was going through, I was dodging bolts of abuse when I was going through my cancer treatment, and I always confided in my sarcoma nurses, always. Yeah. You just naturally open up to them. So they
absolutely
have a position to sit, to have sat Fosia down and saying, what's all this about?
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, again, hospitals, they see abuse from partners on maternity wards all the time.
Exactly, yeah.
And here you've got a midwife who has been told about what the abuser was saying.
Yeah.
And she's done a risk assessment, but not completed it, and then handed it over to another midwife to complete, who had obviously no idea of what had happened. Obviously, whatever was told to her was communicated by the midwife.
Yeah.
But how can you start a risk assessment and then give it to somebody else to finish off? It wasn't even there when it happened.
No. Yeah, and this is a common failing. You know, I mean, when you say they did a risk assessment, they wouldn't be trained to risk assess in the same way that I would risk assess, for example, how the police, when they are conducting it the right way, would be risk assessing. Their risk assessments are not the same, so they're not to look for the same things. But this is the point: is they should be. That's the point. Yeah. They should be. They need to have that a very deep understanding in terms of coercive control and stalking and all the abuse related crimes. They have to be able to safeguard.
I mean, if you see a baby, is a
milestone. Where
I mean, the thing is, when you watch the documentary, obviously, I didn't know this until I was in court. But when you look at the documentary, watch the documentary, the witness actually says she was that afraid. She told her husband, and then her husband said to her that you need to report this.
Yeah.
So look at that.
And yeah. It's a common failing. Because, like I say, they will see this a lot. They will see this a lot because
it's a common milestone. I've worked in a hospital where many, many times security and police are called up because of abusive partners, ex-partners turning up. They see this all the time.
Yeah. But, I mean, I think midwives generally should have this training because, you know, they don't just see mothers that are victim of domestic abuse in the hospital environment. They would go to the home and visit.
Of course.
I mean, I know that happened with me. I know when I remember the midwife coming out and I was being very, very cagey with what I was saying, but she picked it up from my whole demeanor that she said, is everything okay? Is he being abusive? And there must have been something that I said that sparked that concern. Now she said she was concerned, but she didn't do anything.
It's all right being concerned.
Yeah.
You know, actions speak louder than words. You know, you're talking about innocent women losing their lives. It's better to be overcautious than undercautious.
Yeah.
And it's like what I said, all women that report abuse, sadly, must be seen as a potential murder victim.
100%. You know, particularly when there are, because didn't he make a threat of some kind to her life? Didn't he say in a hospital about, you know?
Yeah, about something along the lines of that it'd be better off if she was dead.
Yes.
Something like that, which came out in court, obviously, the witness. You know, straight away, alarm bells should have rung.
Which is a threat to kill.
It's a threat to kill.
You know, as what we are inclined to do is when a perpetrator says anything like that, we think, the brain naturally tries to rationalize it. And it's like, they won't actually do it. We may feel genuine fear, but we rationalize and think, they won't do it.
Yeah.
But what we
and
have
especially, to understand is, you know, there were recordings of him 4 months before as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's like everything's being ignored and played down by the authorities.
Yeah. I mean, what we can't lose sight of is that one in two perpetrators follow through on any direct or indirect threats to kill. Now, they don't have to be direct threats for there to be a risk that they will follow through on it. These can be indirect threats as well. When I say indirect threats, these can be, I don't know. I mean, there's a case, I can't remember the victim's name, actually, off the top of my head. But she was, post-separation, she was shot through her car window. And her daughter beside her.
Oh, God.
But prior to that, he had, because he lived on a farm, he had a license, obviously he had a license for guns, and he had a gun cupboard, and he would knock on the gun cupboard door, or get a rifle out and go to, you know, as if it, you know, because it didn't have anything in it, but he would put the fear of God into her, just by the sheer presence of the gun. Now that's not a direct threat, knocking on the gun cupboard door. That's an indirect threat. That's a suggestion that I could do something.
Yeah, of course.
I could do something. And it's planting that seed of uncertainty in the victim's mind of, I better not overstep the line, because what if? But then the other part of you, your brain, is like, oh, but they won't do it. But there's still that little seed there that thinks, but what if they do?
Yeah.
I better not overstep the line. And it's things like that that will get the victim back in line very quickly. Quite often it's not what they say. It is a tone of voice, and it is gestures that have a greater impact than words. Because words, we generally tend to verbally challenge back. And I don't know whether Fosio was like this, but I know I was very much so. He would be verbally threatening to unalive me. He would, and I would verbally challenge him back, because I would
heard the voice recordings. Fosio was,
yeah, she was, she was still trying to reason with him, yeah, and to him, and you know, and not being a pushover, and yeah,
and she wasn't, and he didn't like that. He didn't like the fact that Fosio was,
yeah,
able to talk to him,
yeah,
able to,
yeah,
have her own opinion. He hated that.
But yeah, there's so many. The hospital should have done something.
Absolutely,
they should have done something. So okay, there's failings on the police's part. The police could have prevented this, but equally, the hospital could have stepped. Yeah. Oh, granted, they don't have a lot of control over the police and what they do and CPS, but they are a credible source for an investigation. So that credibility carries a lot of weight.
Yeah.
And this is why it's very important that they get it right, because they do carry, their credibility carries a lot of influence in the criminal setting and in the family court setting. It carries a lot of credibility. So it puts even more emphasis on the importance on them getting it right. You know, they have, at the end of the day, they are responsible for safeguarding.
Of course, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, it's not just the safeguarding of the victim, but they are responsible for safeguarding of their extended family as well, and an unborn child.
Of course, absolutely.
Yeah. So, yeah, yeah. So we're going to break for another interval, and we shall, we're going to talk about what needs to change, within the system, and what would you like, listeners, both professional and potential victims, to take from Fosia's experience? So we'll catch you back after the next break.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movements and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So welcome back to the last part of this show. So let's talk about the what needs to improve, Yasmin. I mean, obviously we've talked on the interval there. What needs to improve?
Speaking from experience, unfortunately, I think when the police are called out to incidences like Fosia reported, they need to look at this woman as somebody's daughter, somebody's child, somebody's sister, and not just another statistic, and listen to her and take every single precaution they can to ensure her safety, because she has taken the big step of contacting them. Now they should help her and put a plan together and follow it through.
And I'd like to say, you know, it does, you know, speaking from personal experience, you know, it takes a lot of courage.
Absolutely.
To reach out to the police.
And they do encourage you to contact the police.
Yeah.
So when you are doing the right things, because Fosia did do the right things.
Yeah.
She contacted the I contacted the police on two occasions with Fosia's permission. She handed over voice recordings to them. Obviously, she contacted divorce lawyers. She did everything that she could humanly possibly do. She basically, she did their work for them.
Yeah.
So what did, in return, what did they do?
And I know we spoke on the interval about, you know, how they were just they kept honing in on that last visit, just focusing on that last visit. But, you know, it is when you're risk assessing, it's really important that you look at, you need to view that case like you are, like you're reading a shortened version of somebody's lifespan of that relationship, the story of that relationship. You need to understand how you got there, because they didn't get there overnight.
No,
that's the timeline. We have to look at the timeline. We have to know how it started. We need to look for that shift in the behavior. And then we're looking for those escalation points. And within that timeline, we are looking for a pattern to the behavior. Not just a pattern to the behavior from the perpetrator, but a pattern to the impact it's had on the victim as well.
Yeah.
And those are, you know, when a victim is displaying extreme fear, whether that be fear for herself or fear for her children or fear for her extended or fear for her extended family, that is a risk factor in itself.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, there was just so many failings and so much information was communicated to them, then it's a case of what did they do to protect Fosia?
Yeah. And like we said...
And her baby, you know, what did they actually do?
Yeah. I mean, like we said, Yasmin, you know, they... we know they're running on empty. However, and, you know, I'm the first person to, you know, acknowledge that when you do a detailed timeline, and I mean, let's just put it into context. You know, we've been on this call an hour and a half, because obviously we've spread this over two episodes.
Yeah.
Now, this is not a fully comprehensive timeline, because obviously the main person who has input isn't here to give her version of events.
That's right, yeah.
So it's not a quick process to do a proper timeline. It takes, if I'm sitting down with the victim to do a timeline of events, it can take me anything from 4 to 5 hours to just to do with a timeline.
Absolutely.
And that's a basic timeline. Now, what with that timeline, what the police do with that timeline is that they expand on certain areas and they work from beginning through to the end, and they expand on different areas where they want more details and more data from the victim. So when I've watched officers in a statement-taking process use that timeline as it's supposed to be used, we've been there all day in that interview, in that statement-taking process. So it just demonstrates how much time it takes. So it does take a lot of time. So they've spent 3 hours on one visit alone.
Yeah.
To produce nothing.
Yeah, exactly. This is what I'm saying. I'm not denying they didn't rush. I'm not even denying the fact that...
Yeah.
They weren't showing care.
No.
What I'm saying is, yes, they did come. Yes, they did take the time. But what did they actually do to ensure Fawzi's safety?
Exactly.
And then... on the second visit, her baby's safety.
Yeah.
What did they actually do?
Yeah. I mean, show empathy, absolutely. It's important to show empathy. Yeah. Victim needs that empathy.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is this needed more than empathy. This needed their attention.
Empathy isn't going to save somebody's life.
No, exactly, absolutely.
Yeah. What you did can they show actually... empathy with
well, yeah, exactly. What steps did they do? What steps did they take to ensure the safety of Fawzia and to reassure Fawzia that they were going to help her? And obviously the second visit, the baby.
Yeah.
You had the baby involved. What did they actually do?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and for me, you know, if I give my sixpenny worth in regards to what I think needs to change is that they need to use their time better.
Yeah, of course, absolutely.
Stop wasting time on things that are not producing results.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, as police officers, they see a lot of domestic-related incidents, and they could have even said to Fawzia, we're trained police officers, and we see this type of stuff day in, day out,
yeah.
And this is how it is. And,
yeah.
You know... actually tell her about incidents where things have happened and they've escalated and that, you know, she's at high risk. Tell her.
Yeah.
Communicate it to her.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because actually, you know, victims aren't the expert.
No, they're not. Absolutely.
No, they're not the expert. They need to be told. And this is what this show is all about. This show is all about educating the average person. And hopefully, also educating professionals. And
I mean, it's like going to a doctor. You go to a doctor with ailments. You are relying and trusting that doctor to firstly give you a diagnosis and secondly to give you the treatment.
Yeah.
You're not the expert. The doctor is. You're telling the doctor the ailments and then it's down to the doctor to give you that best possible diagnosis and treatment.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. So what would your final advice be to the professionals to avoid if they are dealing with another case similar to Fawzia's? What would your advice be?
Well, before I come to that, what I would like to say is if somebody is experiencing abuse, what I would say to them is, please do not keep it to yourself.
No.
Reach out to somebody that you trust and tell them. Report it to the police. Yes, the police have failed Fawzia and many, many others, but at least it was on record and the proof was there. Reach out to a domestic abuse agency and tell them so it's recorded there as well, because in this instant, the two agencies that were involved were Karma Nirvana, where I contacted them and told them everything. And then I also contacted Women's Aid and those who contacted them as well. But also, if you can safely document yourself like Fawzia did, if you can do it safely.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is why I put so much emphasis on, and actually part of my resource for the average person, which is the Domestic Abuse Breakthrough Handbook and Domestic Abuse Breakthrough Bundle, I have a timeline template for that very reason, so that you can start to create your own timeline. Because although we, as we've said, you know, this is something that the police should be taking more seriously themselves, but we can't rely on them to do the right thing. So if you and you know, a lot of the time, like Fawzia, you know, I had to do a lot of the work for them as well, and it shouldn't be this way.
Ultimately,
we can't dig our heels in and say, no, it's not my responsibility.
No, absolutely not. And as for the
safety is our responsibility as well.
As to the professionals, what I would say is, what they need to do is, every time a woman or a man reports abuse, think of them as a person, not another statistic. This could be your daughter, your sister, your mother.
Yeah.
And follow it through.
Yeah.
Follow it through. Because even it's okay going into a situation and coming across as caring and empathizing with that person, but what are you actually doing? What steps are being taken to ensure that person's safety?
Absolutely.
Put a plan together with the person.
That's it.
You know, think to yourself, this person has taken the biggest step in contacting you. Because obviously, let's face it, a lot of incidents go unreported.
Less than 24%
think of the fact that this person has taken the first massive step. Follow it through. Don't just take a report and write it and file it away. Follow it through. Check out on that person.
Even if there's no, even if then, and obviously for criminal, we have to prove beyond reasonable doubt. The onus of proof is a lot higher, certainly, than it is in family court. But even if there isn't enough evidence to get a conviction, you know, every single call to the police that explain to the victim that there isn't enough to convict, but we're not dismissing you.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely.
Detailed timeline of events.
Yeah.
Ring in to us immediately. And the every time they ring in, you must take it seriously. You must.
Absolutely. I mean, the fact is, obviously, Fawzia has been failed, but the fact that the police were called on two occasions and Fawzia gave them statements, that helped the conviction.
Yeah.
Of course it did.
And of course, you know, the other important thing is, you know, if they haven't got enough to forward to CPS, talk to them about a safety exit plan.
Yeah, absolutely. This is what I'm saying. Yeah.
And if you can support them with that, support them with it.
The CPS and everything else would have come much later down the line. First, ensure that person's safety.
Yeah.
You know, that would have been much, much, much later down the line. You know, they could have said, look, we'll talk about that later on. Your safety at the moment is the most important thing.
100%. Yeah, 100%. Right, thank you, Yasmin. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on and talking about Fosia. And I just hope it helps somebody, even if it helps one person secure safety.
Yeah.
It's absolutely worth it. But I know this is going to help a lot of people. And professionals, if you're listening, listen to the advice that's been given because it's really, really important. And I shall look forward to catching my listeners on the next episode next week.
Thank you for listening. To learn more about Kate's work, head to her bio on UK Health Radio. Until next time, stay strong, stay informed, and always remember, you're not alone.